Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is John Cass, johncassnews.com, where you get his columns and also the Chicago Way podcast. John, just arriving. He was out late last night at Lala, so we'll find out how Metallica was for him. So we have the latest incidents of a police stop and chase and physical encounter that leads to, number one, an arrest, but number two, a protest. This happened in Oak Lawn. Oak Lawn police releasing dash cam and body cam video yesterday after a 17-year-old who was a passenger in a car that was pulled over got out of the car and then immediately took off, leading to police officers to chase him, ultimately subdue him. But the body cam video shows two Oakland police officers punching the young man in his leg, and one was punching him in the leg, the other was punching him in the head. And so this has led to a protest. Also, the young man is of Palestinian extraction, and so now it's become, of course, a racial, ethnic, religious thing, too, because we must play identitarian politics if there is an assailant of a different race than the police officer. It couldn't just be the sum and substance of behavior. It has to be race-related. Here's Oak Lawn Police Chief Daniel Vittorio talking about what his officers did.
Once they feared for their safety and they had reasonable suspicion that he was armed with a weapon in that bag and he was not complying and he was trying to open that bag, they were in fear of their safety.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a key point. So the young man has a bag, like a satchel. He gets out of the car. He's got his hand on it. Then he takes off. The next thing you see is him on the ground. He's still clutching the bag. He won't put his arms behind his back. He's still clutching the bag. He's still reaching for the bag, and the officers are trying to subdue him. They went through the police video, the dash cam video in particular, that shows what happened between the two officers and the young man, 17-year-old. This is the narration of the video, the pertinent part of the video that was shown yesterday.
What's important to note in this part of the video, you can see the subject's right hand. He maintains constant control of that bag. He's not releasing that bag as the officers are dealing with him and giving him commands. He's still trying to gain access to that bag. Go ahead, Rick.
9-5 Rick Vicker, 9-5 Rick Vicker. Check with that
an officer's trying to pull his arm out, still can't gain control.
Put your hand on your back! Do it now! Here, push your hand on your back! Touch your point. Put your hand on your back! Do it now!
Pause it, Rick.
And this third officer respond, you can tell him saying, pressure point, which is in a striking maneuver. It's a pressure point that they put behind the ear to try and gain compliance. Okay, Rick.
Do it now!
Hand behind your back!
That's the taser.
Got it.
Then they were able to cuff him.
But He doesn't stop resisting them until he's tased. They search him.
What happened to the audio at this point?
One second. And it's just, at this point here is where he pulls the gun out of the bed.
So there was a 25 cal handgun in the bag that the 17-year-old was clutching. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Here's what mom had to say.
When I saw that video, it devastated me. It broke me. My stomach was in knots.
And this led to a protest outside of the Oklahoma police station yesterday at which the kid's attorney spoke.
People united!
The Palestinian community is furious.
We'll never be defeated!
Rallying outside the police department this afternoon, Abdullah's family, friends, and community members are demanding action against the three officers they say beat the teen beyond reason.
Officers are allowed to use force to subdue people, but they're not allowed to use excessive force. And this was extremely excessive and savage.
So here we have, again, John, another instance where a little bit of compliance goes a long way. You can understand, I guess, why he took off. I mean, in his, you know, juvenile mind, because he's got, he had like some dope on him.
Did he have a gun?
He had a gun in the satchel. And
he was not allowing the police to open that satchel,
right,
because he was pushing it inside his person, right?
And so first and foremost, you have, again, he was a passenger. He was in the backseat of the car. It was a traffic stop. They first get the driver out, and they search him because they smell cannabis. And the driver complies, not beaten up, no chase. Driver complies, you know, they search him, pat him down, blah, blah, blah.
It happened to me in Oakland.
He gets out of the car, I should say. And they start to search him. He immediately bolts. They give chase. And then the rest of what you've heard in part and what I've explained in part occurs. And they find that he's got a gun on him. And again, refusing to comply and put his hands behind his back. And so they're using leg strikes. And this is what the police chief, Daniel Vittoria, is talking about. This is what they're trained to do. It seems to me watching this and, you know, the outrage. Now, and by the way, the kid's banged up, and they showed a picture of him in his hospital bed. He's got a neck brace on, and they allege that he has a facial fracture. So, I mean, I'm not discounting that he was beaten up pretty good. But I just think this starts from the premise that when you see these videos, there are some people who are under the false impression that a physical encounter with police is supposed to be a fair fight.
And the first thing they do is try to get an angle, like a racial angle,
right,
a political angle.
Right.
The guy had a gun on him. What is a cop supposed to do? Shoot me? Shoot me so you can feel better, so your feelings aren't hurt?
Well, and there was reasonable suspicion that he was armed or had something in the satchel that police had reasonable reason to be concerned about.
Because he ran.
Because he ran, and then when he's on the ground, he's continuing to grab it, hold it. He won't comply. He won't put his arms behind
his back. 17 years old?
17.
I've been in that same situation without a gun in Oak Lawn when I was 17.
Okay.
On the way to a party, graduation party, stopped at 95th Street to get liquor. Yeah, I was 17 years old, fake IDs. We get the fake IDs.
John Cass, the rebel years.
Rebel years, right. Fake IDs, get the whiskey. Cop, the guy at the whiskey place, you know, the store probably called a friendly copper. They came, they grabbed us. In the car was a quarter pound of ditch weed. Okay? The old ditch weed.
Uh-huh.
Two police officers, one that I ended up knowing later in life.
Was he your parole officer?
They weren't happy about it, the first thing I said as we all got pulled out of the car, I remember hearing Led Zeppelin, like Misty Mountain Hop,
mm-hmm,
as I was walking up to the car, and the cops jumped me. And I've said, nobody say a word until you speak to your lawyer. I didn't even get lawyer out before the backhand came and I got it right in the face. I'm not bragging about it. I'm not saying it was a good thing.
Yeah.
But I embarrassed my family and myself. I broke the law. And it was a felony beef at the time. And I can understand why this kid wanted to run. But you have a gun on you, kid. And this is not a this is not the Palestinian struggle. Okay?
Right.
This is a kid with a gun, and his dad's probably a hardworking man, maybe a businessman, and you don't have a gun on you. That's all.
Well, right, and
what's a 22? What's a 25 going to do?
Well, and if you, and I guess it was loaded with three rounds, but if you do have a gun on you, you should say, "I have a gun on me," or "I have a gun in the car," or whatever. Right? If the police are going to search,
right.
He's a kid. He's 17. He's not a zygote. I mean, you should know. At that age, I mean, to your point, you should know how to interact with police.
I saw the video.
Yeah.
It didn't look like they were. It was like the punching wasn't designed to have two strikes and get the thing that's in the pocket. It was more. It was more like pounding. Like it didn't look like it was forceful.
Well, I mean, you know,
really, I mean,
he's a fairly slender kid, and you know, the police are. I don't know. I mean, they bring force to bear, obviously, that he suffered some injuries. But I just want to make this point, emphasize this point. It is not a fair fight. It's not supposed to be a fair fight. This isn't a UFC match. This isn't some TV show
right. Where
everybody throws down their weapons and it's not a bar fight.
Mm-hmm.
Police are supposed to bring overwhelming force to a physical encounter. That's what they're supposed to. Not excessive force. But overwhelming force, and there's a distinction. And I just think people see that. Why couldn't they have done something? This is like the people who say, you know, why?
Shoot him in the head.
Shoot him in the knee.
Shoot him in the hand.
Shoot him in
like
the
hand. Like Roy Rogers. Right.
Shoot the gun out of his hand.
Right.
Yeah, don't aim center mass.
No.
And this, it's the same thing here. And you heard the police chief talk about pressure points, and this is what they're trained to do to get compliance. They tased him, still trying to get compliance to get that hand off that satchel, and you don't want to leave that for a second, because all it takes is a second to get a gun and shoot yourself or one of the officers. How many times have we seen this play out?
There was a theme in Oak Lawn when I was a kid there. There was a sign on 95th Street. It said, "Welcome to Oak Lawn. Be prudent, stay safe." And that, in those days,
in that order,
in those,
yeah, yes, right.
It was on 95th Street. In those days, Oak Lawn was influenced heavily by the Chinatown crew and guys from the Chinatown crew.
Well, I like
you
that.
Didn't bleep around.
Be prudent is safe connected safe. To being safe. Yeah,
right.
No, I like that.
Uh-huh.
Coming up at 5:38, we'll get an update from John. You were late this morning because I assume late night at Lala. You know,
that was me.
Reliving the last vestiges of your youth.
It's a family tradition.
Top of the morning, Dan and in for Amy J. this morning, John Cass, johncassnews.com, where you get his extraordinary columns, his Chicago Way podcast. $50 a year to subscribe.
And 2 months off.
And two months off.
Or $5 a month.
Oh, okay. All right.
And, you know, tell all your friends. Dan does it all the time. Tell all your friends where you can find me.
Yes, johncassnews.com.
Save me from taking out an ad in the paper.
Don't do that. Don't waste your money. John, I don't know. I know you were at Lala last night late. So I don't know what else you have going on this weekend, but I wanted to invite you to the LGBTQ+ pool party in Glen Ellen. Yeah. Yeah. This will be at the Sunset Pool in Glen Ellen, which is a Park District pool. It is, I guess, sponsored by or being put on by a group called Young:Equal.
Pardon me, sir?
Young:Equal, a group that encourages youth to engage in sexual behavior. Join your Young colon equal friends for an after hours pool party. Enjoy sunset pool in the company of your fellow LGBTQ plus peers while donning the swimwear that makes you feel your best.
The is this the punctuation point or the mark or the
The punctuation mark.
Okay.
Yeah. Young.
I didn't know what you were going.
Yeah, I'm just this young colon equal is name of the organization. I mean, what can I tell you?
I need a copy editor.
So if you go, you don the swimwear that makes you feel best, probably for you something in like a curly from the Three Stooges, sort of the full. Yeah, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Does that make you feel your best?
Yeah, that would make me feel like a total man. Yes.
You can nosh on snacks. You can cannonball off the diving board. You can splash alongside friends familiar and new. This is a private party just for you. People in the Rainbow Identity and Allies, John, are welcome to attend ages 13 to 24.
13?
13 to 24.
So you have to go. Mom drops you off there.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun. Text me.
Pizza is donated by Billy Bricks. Cupcakes donated by Foiled Cupcakes. And, RSVP to let us know you're coming. There's Sunset Pool, Park District Pool, and Glen Ellen for the Body Positive Pool Party sponsored by Young Equal. 13 to 24. This is the same group that hosted an event at the Glen Ellen Public Library. Of course they did. Let's Talk Queer Creativity and Joy. That was for high school students. That was back in June. That event promised to celebrate LGBTQ plus Pride Month by sharing ways to bring joy, connectivity, and creativity to life and listening to personal stories about being out in Glen Ellen. Students from the Glen Bard East and West Prism Clubs and the West Chicago Suburbs chapter of Young Colon Equal led the discussion. Prism Clubs at the Glen Ellen schools are intended to foster feelings of acceptance and worth for all individuals, except Christians. That was my parenthetical remark. So, how about that?
Well, young gay people sometimes I think feel isolated and alone and they shouldn't feel isolated.
Yeah, is that right?
But at the same time, maybe you could have a pool party, like this kind of pool party for the 5-year-olds in Portland.
Well, I don't know if there'll be a drag queen timeout or a drag queen swim only, portion of the pool party. But the whole marginalized people and they feel sometimes feel isolated and unsure of themselves.
So you're saying I've been propagandized to the point of weakness?
No, I'm saying you have empathy for
all people.
Can you point to a teenager or a teenage cohort, since we talk in groups?
Yeah.
That
no individuals left.
That doesn't sometimes feel isolated, lonely, unsure of themselves. Does that happen to every teenager, or was it just me?
I thought that was the nature of all popular songs from the 50s to the 70s.
I just sort of get weary of the cant when it comes to these topics.
I'm properly admonished by Dan Proft
for
being a weakling.
Thank you.
But he did it in a gentle way. He was gentle with me.
Well, I am gentle. Speaking of which, related story, just catching up on what the Lavender Bund has been up to. The Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, you're still a member, right? They've introduced new language guidance for U.S. hospitals. It is related to sustenance for babies.
You mean chest feeding? Is this what we're talking about?
Chest feeding.
Uh-huh.
But that's not enough, John. Colin Wright, who's a journalist, highlighted some of the examples of the new guidance. The new inclusive terminology that's being implemented requires asking each patient what terms they wish to have used when discussing their care, right? The sort of, your pronouns, of course. Also, there's a new guide titled Suggested Terms in Breastfeeding and Human Lactation. One is traditional terms, one is gender-inclusive terms, and then the final is clinical contexts. This is really important. I know language isn't important when you're talking about a recession, but when you're talking about human lactation, it's very important.
Right. Right.
All right.
Right. Because everyone can, all men can have babies. Right.
Traditional terms such as mother and father, parent, we know this.
Terrible terms.
Yeah. Hospitals also encourage to use they, them pronouns if the gender of the patient is not immediately known. Because who can know these things? The traditional term breast milk, which the guide suggests should be called milk, parent's milk, or father's milk. Because, as you know, John, you can milk anything that has nipples.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
You could, Mr. De Niro. Yeah. Uh-huh. Jordan in Antioch, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
So I'm a little bit confused here. During a global pandemic of COVID, I couldn't attend my church and worship with my fellow Christians. But during the monkeypox global health concern, we can have a state-sponsored Turkish bath event? I don't understand. Would there be any backlash if they said they called this a super spreader? I don't know. Just confused.
Yeah, it's confusing times. Monkey, thanks.
Can you get monkeypox in a pool, or is that just based on your research for CDC guidelines?
Well, I don't know, but I know that, and we're talking about 13 to 24-year-olds, so we're talking about at least some people of age. But it is a public pool. I guess it's a private party to public pool. I don't know what will or won't go on there, but yeah, I suppose there's some concern. I mean, to Jordan's point, the World Health Organization, I mean, need I say more, a global health emergency, monkeypox. And there is all of this discussion about what we are or are not doing with respect to stopping the spread, slowing the spread.
It has to be a priority. It has to be a national priority. And if that means not going to vote in November and just mailing in your ballots.
There was an interesting, I mean, since Jordan brought it up, and I know this is a topic that you're passionate about, monkeypox prevention. Kennedy, you know, she's on Fox Business or something. I don't know. I don't watch these shows because they're just
dumb,
intolerable, right. Intolerably stupid. But anyway, Kennedy, who used to be a MTV VJ and now is some sort of like libertarian
qualifications for
yeah, she's you know, some avant-garde. This is right. What like conservatives think is cool, I guess, or some libertarians do. Anyway, she's got a show. She had a panel on this with Ned Ryan from American Majority, Brad Palumbo from Fee and formerly Washington Examiner. We've had on the show many times. Marie Harf, too, was the Lacey part of the Cagney and Lacey team. Jen Psaki and Marie Harf back in the day, back in the good old days of Joe Obama, terms one and two over at the State Department. Anyway, this is how that discussion of monkeypox went. Ned Ryan stepped on the third rail and was chastened for doing so.
As for monkeypox, I think there's a pretty good rule in life. Don't attend gay orgies. When you look at the New England Journal's report of the 528 cases that reviewed.
Ned, come on, man.
It's not about gay. How about not any orgies?
Go look at the New England Journal's report that NBC News reported on Friday, in which of the 528 cases they reviewed, 95% were between sex between men. I think we actually have to have a serious conversation about where this is coming from. When I'm done, Brad, you can talk. Instead of going crazy and declaring a national pandemic when 3,000 people have it right now, it's insane.
I don't know, man. You don't have to be gay to get monkeypox, and you don't have to be bigoted when you talk about treating something that is that easily spread, Marie.
It's not bigoted.
Yeah, it is.
This is science, Kennedy. 95% of the cases from the New England Journal.
You know what? I'm going to let Brad respond. Okay, I'm going to let Brad respond because, Brad, we had 372 doses. The United States in Denmark, where the smallpox, monkeypox vaccine is manufactured, they were ready to go. But because this has been an issue for more men in the gay community, it seems like it has been lower on the priority list. Brad?
Yeah, look, Ned is right when he says that monkeypox right now is mostly affecting gay men. The problem is that public health-wise, not going to orgies in general is a good policy to not get sexually transmitted diseases. So we have to be really careful. We saw with the AIDS crisis, with the HIV crisis, about how certain communities or certain gay people will be stigmatized over something that lots of people do. And we got to be careful about that.
And that kind of, I will use the term, bigoted language that makes it seem like the only people that get this are from one group of Americans. Hey, guess what? Gay men also have friends and family members and colleagues, and this is not just transmitted through sexual activity. It's transmitted through close contact. So you don't fight diseases. I'm glad Brad brought up HIV/AIDS. You don't fight diseases by caricaturing the people who get them or who get them at one point in time.
But important point.
Want it both ways. That's what we want. Both ways.
Pun intended.
We want to complain about lack of funding for a disease that involves gay people or some gay people, and then we have to shut down anyone who dares mention it.
Well, Guy, I'm going to have to start tuning into Kennedy because I learned from this august panel that going to orgies is a bad idea, particularly if you want to stop the spread of STDs. Gee, I had no idea. Thank you so much. This is very, so educational. But setting that aside, so here's the thing. Yeah, I know Marie Kennedy, Brad.
Former State Department.
That monkeypox, we know that it transmits from close contact. That's how kids have gotten it, we presume.
At orgies?
However, we also have some idea of the genesis of the virus and its spread.
Okay. Here we go.
Well, we do. I mean, there were sex clubs in Belgium.
Does it have to do with a monkey?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, I'm talking about Rochelle Walensky, the director of the CDC, said, you know, this is mainly an issue for the community of men who have sex with men. Is that a community? Okay. Are there communities based on your behavior? And that's the other point I wanted to make with Brad Palumbo's reference to HIV and AIDS, and then Marie Harf picking it up and saying you don't caricature people who get the virus. Well, no, you don't caricature them, but you say behavior matters. So Arthur Ashe got HIV and AIDS, or Ryan White did, in a different way than Magic Johnson and many other people did. And so you, I think, ascribe different understandings and, frankly, different levels of empathy, not for anybody getting sick, but for the behavior. You're talking about behavior. That's not a caricature. That's a description. This is dangerous, reckless behavior. Obviously, Arthur Ashe, Ryan White, it was blood transfusion, so that's not their fault. That was the failure of the screening for, you know, by blood banks and so on and so forth. So that's different than somebody who engages in reckless conduct, whether it's intravenous drug use and sharing needles or it's these other matters. But the idea this is bigoted language, I mean, Ned Ryan is right. He's citing the New England Journal of Medicine. He could have cited the frickin' CDC director if he wanted to, because that's exactly what she said. But this is, we live in an era where you can't call things what they are.
What does that mean when you can't call things what they are? When you pervert language to the point of you can't even understand what people are talking about.
No, I mean,
what does that mean?
And it's impossible to keep up. Yeah, it's impossible to keep. What do you mean? What does it mean?
What I mean is, what is the effect of changing language constantly and people can't keep up? Constant redefinition. For example, recession, for example. Just take sex out of it. The recession is not two quarters, successive quarters of negative growth.
Yeah, right. Emerson, right? First, the language is corrupted, then man is corrupted. This is people being persuaded or compelled to traffic in lies, to live a lie, and you know, it ends badly. I mean, the annals of history should tell us something. Bill in Cape Coral, Florida.
Yeah, you know, being that it affects mainly gay guys, it gives a new meaning to the phrase, get that monkey off my back.
How dare you, sir?
Jim in Crown Point.
I understand that Stephen Colbert is working on the monkeypox dance, but he better be careful and not have him come out in gorilla suits.
Thanks for the call, Jim. There's a thing here. Public health director in New York wants the monkeypox virus to be renamed because it marginalizes vulnerable populations.
This came up early on, and they tried it early on when this thing first started showing, and now they're back to it.
What came up early on?
Changing the suggestion that monkeypox was problematic, the name itself, because of how it spread or who got it originally.
No, he's talking about this guy's talking about that the term monkeypox is somehow, I guess, is it racist? How does it marginalize vulnerable people? Well, I don't understand.
I keep it at arm. What did you say the distance has to be? 10 feet. I don't want to even get near it, but I'm just not.
No, the CDC guidance. I mean, you brought it up, CDC guidance on monkeypox is when you're masturbating with your partner, be 6 feet apart,
and a plastic wall between you.
Well, I mean, yes. For some people, it's probably like a Gallagher concert.
So they
before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J. And John, I wanted to give you a chance to compose yourself after the last discussion. Did you have something you wanted to say about monkeypox?
I have nothing to say about it. I don't want it near me. Stay away, monkeypox.
Okay. Well, again, follow the CDC guidance, wear a mask and whatnot. Ashwin Vasan, I wasn't making this up. I needed to pull this up. We're calling on the Ashwin Vasan is the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene Commissioner. We're calling on the WHO to act immediately to rename the monkeypox virus. We have a growing concern for the potentially stigmatizing effects that the messaging around the monkeypox virus can have on vulnerable communities.
Oops, sorry.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
I'm trying to divine what the problem is here. You rename monkeypox.
Calling Marie, what's her name? Marie Arf or something?
Marie Harf.
Marie Harf, call you.
Rename
She's
it.
She's on her way.
It's stigmatizing effects the messaging around it has. Well, the messaging around it, does that mean this matter of whether it's mainly an affliction of gay men, as we understand it, or is it the actual name? Because he wants it renamed. Am I spending too much time thinking about monkeypox? I don't know, but it's the can't. It's the we're putting in the work every day. It's the stigmatizing marginal population, the effects. It's not a safe space. I'm just so tired of it. Maybe that's it. I've just lost my patience. Our very own Allison Rawadi, she's the director of health of the city, Chicago.
Right.
Yeah, one of the Rona busters. She's also going to be one of the monkeypox busters, if that's still a term in a day. She tweeted out, MPV is not a gay disease. There's nothing inherent in the biology of the virus that limits it to men who have sex with men. The virus spreads through tight-knit social networks. It does not discriminate. Oh, good, because I was thinking that maybe monkeypox was going to be charged with a hate crime. Right?
Just by mentioning it.
Well, and also because of its inequitable impact on the population at large. It's not equity compliant, monkeypox.
You know, some people still think equity and equality are the same, similar thing.
They're antonyms.
Antonyms, yes.
Yeah.
Opposites.
Right. Monkeypox, so Vasan, this creates traumatic feelings of racism and stigma for black people and other people of color, as well as members of the LGBTQIA plus communities. How?
What does it have to do with black people?
I don't know.
Is it a black people's disease?
I don't know. This is just lunacy. Okay. I don't think we're going to solve the monkeypox conundrum today. Coming up at 6:06, we'll turn our attention to how Manchin and the Democrat Socialists pulled one over on Senate Republicans. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Senate Republicans got duped by Joe Manchin. Western civilization hanging in the balance, and Joe Manchin, hero for being unwilling to go along with another $3 trillion in funny money called the Green New Deal. And then Wednesday happened. Kim Strassel has a wonderfully vicious column, because the suggestion was made that Manchin and Schumer duped Republicans. She's less charitable, and I think she's spot on. Manchin, she writes, announced he'd agreed to a $740 billion reconciliation deal after all. Surprise. The kinder commentators are noting that Republicans got duped by their West Virginia buddy, but that's unfair to dupes. Mr. Manchin had never ruled out an agreement. That's true. Quite the opposite. He had said negotiations were continuing. All Republicans had to do was to refuse to touch a semiconductor bill until the reconciliation vehicle expired on September 30th, or better yet, walk away from the bloated industrial policy altogether, especially because they didn't need this bill politically. Inflation, gas prices, baby formula shortages, faltering economy had already provided Republicans all the ammo they needed for their campaign to retake the Senate. But some Republicans saw an opportunity to funnel money to home state chip interests, while others saw a chance to do the only thing they know how, spend. Even Mr. McConnell, master strategist, quote unquote, voted yes. Don't confuse getting duped with a failure of basic impulse control. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Does this dampen your enthusiasm for the GOP in November at all?
Mitch McConnell. Do you put him up against the wall, or do you just let him hang there?
Well, I mean...
Because that's what this is, right?
It's just...
Conservatives don't like him. He's a weasel. We know that. No one trusts him. And this is the...
Well, Rick Scott is angling for Mitch McConnell's job, but if they retake the Senate with Rick Scott as the Senate Campaign Committee Chairman, maybe that's possible. I don't see Mitch McConnell going quietly, though, but at some point, regardless, though, you know, you have all of this energy in the GOP mm-hmm. for the midterms, as you're seeing in the turnout in primary elections, and you have them properly waylaying Biden over the stagflationary environment he has done so much to precipitate. And then what do?
Shoot yourself in the foot.
You go spend $1 trillion. Because, as Kim Strassel rightly points out, it's an opportunity to funnel money to some home state chip interests for some. And listen to this, too. Listen to the terrible politics of this. And by the way, this isn't just about politics. It's terrible policy first, which makes it bad politics. You know, good policy is good politics. So the converse is also correct. 15 of the 17 Republicans who voted for the semiconductor cash aren't even up for re-election this year. She writes, the bill will prove far more useful to Arizona Democrat Mark Kelly, who helped negotiate the legislation and is already bragging that it will cement the state's goal of doubling chips jobs over the next decade. New Hampshire Democrat Maggie Hassan, who used the vote to reinforce her tough on China claim. And then there's Ohio, where retiring Senator Rob Portman just delivered a huge political win to the Democrat vying to succeed him in the job, Tim Ryan, who is the House co-sponsor of the legislation.
Oh, geez.
I mean, it's just bad all the way around.
So McConnell allowed this.
Well, of course.
He supported it. Why? What is the reason?
Is
he being held to account?
I think, held to account. What does that mean?
Somebody grab him by the hair and put him up to a microphone and say, what the hell were you doing?
Well,
what were you thinking, moron?
17 Senate Republicans voted yes, including McConnell. Don't confuse getting duped with a failure of basic impulse control. Right. At best, they got duped. At worst, this is who they are. Mike in Hobart, Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Well, this is one reason we had in Indiana. We had a Democratic Senator Donnelly, and we had to get him out because he said, "I'm a conservative." You know, no, you're going to vote for the party. Okay, when it comes down to it, you're voting with the party. And these Republicans, if they do take control, I have a prediction they won't do anything.
Well, thanks for the call. I mean, I sort of want them to not do anything, because when they do something, it's usually to, you know, advance Leviathan. I mean,
I love gridlock for that reason.
Well, right. We talked about this yesterday with the whole third party gambit of Andrew Yang and Christine Todd Whitman and the silliness of it all. Because gridlock is the problem in D.C. We're not getting enough stuff done, whatever that stuff is. Getting stuff done just means spending money we don't have. Speaking of translating Orwellian phrases, getting stuff done. Yeah. Mike in Plano, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. You know, I get so sick of these Conservative Inc. members like Sean Hannity and others that continuously get mad at Joe Manchin for siding with things that his own party supports. Now, first of all, these guys don't do anything to hold the Republicans accountable. In fact, they often spend time telling you to vote to reelect these same people. But the thing is, these people act like Joe Manchin was supposedly on their side. He was never on our side.
He's a Democrat.
Now, yes, he has done things to block some progressive legislation. Good for him. But he is going to find ways to support his party in areas where he can. Now, he's from a state that Trump won by over 40 points twice. He has had ample time to switch parties like the governor of that state did. And he never has. So what does that tell you about Joe Manchin? These guys need to stop with the Joe Manchin stuff. It's getting annoying.
Totally. Thanks for the call, Mike. And I remember when he was, you know, blocking the $3.5 trillion Green New Deal gambit and was being held up as the great savior of the country. You had all these, Republican donors are flooding his campaign account with contributions. Way to go, Joe. And we talked with Steve Moore about this on and on and on. And we always felt uneasy about, you know, relying on Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema with their fingers in the dike, as it were, on this stuff. I mean, you know, it's just, come on. You can't rely on them. There's always going to cut a deal. So what do you get? You sort of do what the Republicans do. And that's not $3 trillion. Let's do $750 billion and then we'll come back to it. Let's get it rolling with $750 billion.
The same establishment in Washington is the establishment in Illinois, and they do the same things. They act the same way.
It's the old...
Why is anyone surprised?
One of my favorite lines of all time. You've heard me say it on the show before, but I'll say it again because it's that good. When Malcolm Wallop, the Republican from Wyoming senator, retired right before the Gingrich Revolution. This was still in the days of Bob Michael as your House Majority Leader, or House Minority Leader, I should say, before Gingrich, the Gingrich Revolution in 94. When he retired, I think it was 92, he said, Here's the problem with the Republican Party. If the Democrats introduce a bill to burn down the Capitol, the Republicans would compromise and agree to phase it in over 3 years. And this is what you see. This is what you see with those 17 Republicans.
Right.
And you know who the ringleaders are. First of all, the lame ducks. And then you have the lame incumbents like Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, usual suspects. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and John. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
This is exactly why I tell all my friends, I mean, I don't care what political persuasion you are, vote these rotten people out of there and don't let them make a career out of it. They got all kinds of schemes in there all the time in these things they passed where they're all filling themselves and their family members and friends' pockets with all this money that's our money and everything, with all kinds of things we don't even know about. They do all this stuff and everything like that. And there's only a handful of Republicans that are like really conservatives and good. And all the rest of them, they probably get together at night in the bar. They figure out how they're going to bullcrap the American people and put on some kind of show like they're fighting against Hitler. They're on the same side, filling up their own pockets and doing this stupid stuff.
Thanks for the call, Craig. And, you know, Kim Strassel makes reference here. Better yet, walk away from the bloated industrial policy altogether, talking about the chip legislation. That's the, you know, 250 round number, 750 there, 250 there, you're, you know, talking about $1 trillion. And then you are going to turn around and wring your hands about reckless fiscal policy that fuels an inflationary environment. Okay. But it is industrial policy. It is picking winners and losers. And I know there's some disagreement even among Republicans on this. I mean, sort of the populist Republicans who think this is a good idea because we should have the federal government investing in Intel and other related entities in that sector so that we're less dependent on the Taiwan, you know, the Taiwan Semiconductor Company and by extension, the whims of President Xi and the Chinese communists. But this is, you know, 50 billion to chip makers like Intel comes with strings. The strings of the Biden administration's larger ESG Green New Deal agenda.
You want to make chips? How about tax incentives? Cuts.
Well,
don't give me another government program that Biden or the Democrats are going to be.
Right, you've got Intel investing
tentacles down our throats.
You've got Intel investing billions in the plant they're building in Ohio, and I'm sure I know they got incentives at the state and local level. You know, you want to talk about rights, so tax incentives, tax treatment to incentivize the onshoring and the development of that sector so that it is, you know, domestic. Mm. And we don't have the security and problems in addition to supply chain problems we're currently experiencing. I mean, we can have that conversation, but this is not that. This is government playing, in part playing venture capitalist and in part using the power of the purse to advance a larger cultural agenda, not just an economic one. And 17 Republicans are going along with it. And now the country is. Vince in St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. Dan, I'm confused. They had a chance to vote Manchin out. Okay, it's a deep red state. Isn't West Virginia more like a fossil fuel state? And he votes against that, their interest, and they vote him in. So I'm like confused. In the state, it's on the bottom of all the 50 states. It's doing so bad. Their other towns are doing so bad. I'm confused with that. They vote him in, and the red state, that's what I'm confused about. I don't get the Manchin thing, why he was voted back in. They had a chance to get rid of him, and they didn't.
Yeah, I know, but we could say the same thing about the curious choices we make here in Illinois for largely the same reasons. Durbin's a good example, but Manchin is probably the last of the Democrat socialist Mohicans in West Virginia. He just has a lot of institutional street cred for how long he's been in public office and all the favors he's done and the pork he's brought back, Robert Byrd style. And remember, he was reelected prior to Biden and prior to all this GND stuff. And of course, he positions himself, well, the way that he was positioning himself up until Wednesday, as some independent guy who's trying to, hey, let's, you know, reasonable compromises, let's pump the brakes, that's going too far, I'm going to make a deal guy, I'm a pragmatic guy. And, enough people in West Virginia buy that act, that Joe Manchin act, that two-step is not unique to Manchin, but he plays it well in West Virginia. Dan and John Cass in for Amy J, johncassnews.com. And just one more point of emphasis on this discussion we had about the Senate Republicans who...
The combined Republicans in Washington?
Yeah, yeah. Who, you know, lack the impulse control to stop spending money we don't have, as even as they prattle on about inflation this and supply chain that. This keeps getting called a CHIPS bill. Right, it's about semiconductors and national security and industry in America. Even if you believe that, and you believe that federal spending is a way to facilitate the development of and the advancement of the semiconductor industry domestically, of the $280 billion, $52 billion is chips. It goes to chip makers. And, of course, it's controlled by Biden, essentially, like I said, to advance the Biden transition of America's economy and culture. That's what 17 Republicans, 16 plus McConnell, voted for. Biden's transition of our economy and culture. So, you know, only in D.C., could you have a legislation where the spending associated with the top line represents less than one fifth of the total spend? But it's a CHIPS bill. What are you against the semiconductor industry, Prof? I mean, it's just such a scam. Such a scam. Coming up at 6:36, we'll continue our conversation about America's economic transition. With Casey Mulligan, econ professor, University of Chicago. Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning, John Cass, johncassnews.com. The big guy was meeting with... CEOs, and he brought Captain Kangaroo's impersonator, Janet Yellen, along. of course, responding to the news yesterday, the print on the GDP that had us contracting for a second straight quarter, as we said.
And many of the significant banking personnel and economists say we're not in recession.
Significant people, top men. Say we're not in a recession.
He just is so reedy, like paper, a newspaper wet and then dried in the sun. It is just thin, and it's scaring me now. I mean,
we have our own bad. Significant people to talk to about this. One of them is Casey Mulligan. He's a professor of economics at the University of Chicago, served as the chief economist of the White House Council of Economic Advisors in 2018 to 2019, author of You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Casey, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan. Hey, John.
Hey.
So how are we to interpret the stagflationary environment that we're in? I guess that's sort of a leading question.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, we're in a situation now where we're looks like people are working more and definitely
if you're looking
less.
For the latest news...
Oh, sorry about that.
I didn't hear that.
Their response is, well, at least you're working more. That's, I mean, the big reason that people work is to earn more, and that's totally failing right now. And I think it's also easy to link that failure to a lot of policies that have messed up, air travel, energy issues, and you can go down the line.
So we're working more, we're making less, and we're shrinking.
That's right.
Okay. But significant people that Joe Biden talks to says, hey, just look at that 3.6% unemployment rate and enough said.
Yeah. I mean, one of the leaders of that is Mark Zandi, who said we were going to have this awesome boom when Biden became president. Of course, Krugman, joined in that choir and, they've been totally wrong. And I think America knew they were wrong from the get-go.
Somebody else who has been, my estimation is totally wrong. Brian Deese, he's the Well, he's in the position you had as the chief of the White House Council of Economic Advisors for Biden. Obviously, yours was for Trump. Your time was for Trump. But here's what Dedice had to say about the same topic.
We're certainly in a transition, and we are seeing slowing as we all would have expected. But I think if you look at the full data and the type of data that NBER looks at, virtually nothing signals that this period in the second quarter is recessionary. Obviously, in the labor market, 3.6% unemployment. As we look at where we are right now, the consumer continues to power forward with resilience, although at somewhat moderating levels, as you would expect. We are continuing to see businesses invest. And we're hopeful here that the legislation that we're contemplating, hopefully we can move forward with a strong CHIPS Act vote today, would actually provide some serious longer-term incentive for businesses to accelerate investment in the kind of areas where we absolutely need in this economy.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, there's a few things there, but one, we're transitioning, and so things are slowing as anticipated. Oh, really? Is this what was advertised?
Yeah, they didn't advertise it, although plenty of us were saying when we transitioned to this really a European lifestyle, that means we're going to be poorer. We'll have lower wages, and that's because that's what Europe has had, and they've tried to do that with energy and other things. So they're just acting surprised.
And we were just talking about the chip bill and then and the rest of it, too, the $1 trillion in new spending that's coming. What is your response to what? So Deese got the good vote that he was looking for yesterday, of course. What's your response to the idea that the $52 billion out of a trillion for chip makers is going to spur business investment and innovation?
Yeah, it won't in the aggregate. Now, their cronies that they're targeting will have a heyday, renewable energy and things like that. We'll be putting a lot of resources in and not getting as much power and energy out. And that's the definition of low productivity and low wages. I mean, these are all two sides of the same coin. We're going to be working harder to produce less, even going forward under their design of doing things.
Just want to get you to weigh in on this debate that continues within sort of conservative and populist ranks on the center right. And that's essentially industrial policy. And the idea, for every Solyndra, there is a Tesla. And so the idea that government can't be a positive force for innovation in selected sectors is not fair and not one that conservatives should ascribe to.
Well, there's the blind squirrel finding an acorn. I'm not sure if Tesla is that successful. We'll see how that company plays out. They've gotten tons and tons of government money, and they're still an operating company, so they haven't failed yet. But the problem with innovation that makes it tough to handle in the political sphere is you don't know what you missed, because that's the whole point of innovating. You're creating
yes.
something no one's thought of before, and we don't know what we're missing. I mean, when we try to study, we try to say, well, look, the number of new drugs coming out, the number of new companies being formed is going down, and there's something we're missing. But by definition, we don't know what that something was.
Something else, talking about the transition that Brian Deese continues to talk about, but so does Biden, I assume. Probably in that order, Deese, then Biden. This from the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab and the boys, significant people, Joe Biden might say. The transition from fossil fuels to renewables will need large supplies of critical metals such as cobalt, lithium, nickel, to name a few. Shortage of these critical minerals could raise the cost of clean energy technologies. So, you know what we need to do, Casey? We need to start reducing vehicles in private hands. We should move toward eliminating this idea of private ownership of cars.
Yeah, there's certainly a push in that direction. Incredibly insensitive to how most of us live. Makes some sense in certain areas. And that's actually really one of the crimes of what they're doing here. And they're pushing, say, electric vehicles or these other transportation plans for the whole nation. They might make sense in New York City. Maybe they make sense in Silicon Valley, where pollution and crowding is an issue. But when you're pushing the electric vehicles on everyone, that means less available for the people who live in those areas where they could actually produce some benefit. Mm-hmm. So my assessment is actually harming the environment in the name of helping.
The Fed's action this week, the 75 basis point rate hike, another debate that was raging up through Wednesday was whether or not they should have done anything, and certainly whether they should continue hiking interest rates. Some, like Don Luskin, believing that with the money supply contracting now, you have to recognize there's about a year lag, but by this time next year, we should be in a significantly less inflationary environment. What say you?
I do think that inflation will come down eventually. Biden's mess is a temporary thing. The pandemic is a temporary thing. A lot of these things are temporary. Now, that doesn't mean they just last a month. I think historically, after some of these events, we've seen inflation last for 2 years. And then it comes down to a bit more normal. Now, if we put a Fed on a brand new mission that they never had before, fighting climate change or inequality or whatever, then that would be a world changer. And they wouldn't be good at inflation, even with 2 years to get it under control, if they're chasing other objectives.
But and on the tightening and the rate hikes thus far and the prospective rate hikes that I guess to some extent have been factored in.
Yeah, I mean they're tough on the housing, and I think they'll be tough on automobiles, although automobiles have their other problems. But I think they should have done this earlier. But raising the rates is inflation's their job. That's the job they were given, and it'd be nice if they do it.
He is Casey Mulligan, econ professor, University of Chicago, served as the chief economist, the White House Council of Economic Advisors in 2018-2019. His book, You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Casey Mulligan, thanks, as always, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a good day, guys.
Take care. And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line. Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J., John Cass, johncassnews.com. John, help me with this. You were at Lolla last night for Metallica, right?
Yeah, that's me, a headbanger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago Mayor's Office, Chicago Department of Health, put out this in advance of day one of Lollapalooza yesterday. Attention, Chicago and Lolla fans. Fentanyl is a strong opioid that can easily cause overdose. Test your drugs before you use. Carry Narcan and don't use alone. Call 911 if you suspect someone is overdosing. Narcan and fentanyl test strips are available at the Chicago Public Libraries. Learn more about being safe at the Chicago Department of Public Health.
Narcan is what paramedics give you if you're overdosing, right?
Right.
Yeah. So are they giving you, what do you mean a test strip? Like my strip is pink, now I need it.
Right.
Wow.
This part of it. Test your drugs before you use. Carry Narcan. Don't use alone. Narcan and fentanyl test strips are available at the Chicago Public Libraries. You know, I know I'm an old...
Something wrong with that message?
Old then? Fuddy-duddy these days, but this is sort of like the passing out condoms to fifth graders. You really want to stipulate that they're going to have sex. You really want to stipulate that people are going to use drugs. I'm sure that's true, but you want the state to be in the business of facilitating, capitulating to illegal activity?
The argument will be if it saves one life.
I've heard that argument before, yeah.
But what is the state doing? Encouraging drug use at a public event.
I just don't understand. If you want to legalize drugs, then legalize them. that, you know, have, there's just none, there's nothing honest about so many of these debates. What is the point of having laws if you not only have no interest in enforcing them, you're an accomplice to people who break them? What is the point? Why don't you just be honest then and legalize drugs? It's the same thing, say, with cigarettes. Cigarette taxes. Don't smoke cigarettes.
Why do you take cigarette tax?
If cigarettes are so bad, right. If cigarettes are so bad, then ban them, if that's what you think.
Right.
But don't tell me that you're trying to, you know, teen smoking, teen youth anti-smoking campaigns and this and that. Meanwhile, you're saying we've already factored in that you're going to smoke and please make sure you do because we need the money we're anticipating receiving.
All that is clipboard government, like a bunch of people with clipboards walking around interviewing other people for money that you're paying out of your pocket. It's a scam. That's what it is.
Right. It's that, and it's also government incentivizing destructive behavior. Just government incentivizing reckless behavior. That's what you want to underwrite. You want to underwrite drug use at Lollapalooza? I don't.
Do the people of Chicago really care about that? I mean,
no.
Seriously, do they even
know
the question you raised? Do they even entertain it, or is it like NASCAR coming to Chicago? A dome, $2 billion. Who needs more cops? Let's put a dome on Soldier Field. Whoa, Lori, awesome! Is that it?
We're just
fools. We're fools.
You pay somebody's, you pay an institution and the people in charge of it to prey on you and your kids. That just doesn't make sense to me. It never has. But, you know, I'm funny that way. Speaking of the rule of law, police made arrests in 12% of crime cases in 2021, which is the lowest rate in 20 years since data was first released. The number of arrests in Chicago peaked in 2005 when arrests were made in nearly 31% of reported crimes. That number has been on the decline since. The number of traffic stops and tickets have also dropped, and the number of investigative stops fell by more than 50% between 2019 and 2021. 12% arrest rate in cases where an arrest is warranted. 12%.
Look,
we know the murder clearance rate is less than 1 in 5.
You demonize the politics of this town was about demonizing cops every day, harassing them.
Still
every
is.
Day. Still is. The neighborhoods of Mount Greenwood, Northwest Side, Jefferson Park, there are neighborhoods under siege by the politics of this town. So you expect them to get out of their car? Every copper I see, every young one I see, I say, don't get out of your car. It's not worth it. What do you get? You get out of your car and you make an arrest, and then what?
That's funny you said that. In the past, I might see a guy with a gun in his waistband. I'd jump out and chase him. No way I do that now, said one decorated police officer who spoke to the AFL-CIO NPR Times.
Hey, you know what? Why don't you bring that up at your next popcorn expose news conference, Lori?
Yeah.
Remember that one?
That's one of the capers that has gone unsolved. Perhaps the most important. Bobby Rush's popcorn.
My popcorn. The gall.
Even if you return his popcorn, can Bobby Rush ever really be made whole?
Broken man.
Orville Redenbacher rolling in his grave.
That's the politics of this town.
You mentioned police. You know, I was in, I was on the South Side the other day, and I wonder if there's something bubbling not too far below the surface. And I say that just because, I mean, this is, you know, completely anecdotal, but it's just feelings you get when you're around town. You talk to people. I stopped in for a beer at Dinger's in Beverly, you know, on Western, and the sign outside, the sign on the marquee, was something like, I actually have a picture of it, but it was, we fight like Golden, G-O-L-D-E-N.
Yeah, like the family.
Like Danny Golden.
Danny Golden.
The cop who was shot and paralyzed. Yeah. I mean, this is, so this like, oh, this is a story in the news cycle for a few days and then it goes away. I don't think it's going away everywhere. That's that, fight like a Golden. Fight like a Golden is a sign outside, you know, on the marquee at Dinger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they're, everything is, most everything is uneven and, it's moved by a small percentage of the population one way or the other. But there are definitely pockets where I think a revolt is brewing.
If you don't have people like the Goldens, you don't have a city. The city's dead without people like the Goldens. And in every community, black, white, brown, every community. And when they're gone, the city's gone. And Lori Lightfoot has done nothing to keep them here.
Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan and John. I'm just wondering, if I'm down at Lollapalooza tonight and I discover that some guy sold me some bad fentanyl-laced drugs, do I turn him into the police and have him arrested, and then they'll arrest me for possession of drugs?
Yeah.
They might arrest him, but they won't arrest you because there are not enough cops to handle these calls.
Yeah, I was going to say, based on the stats, they're not going to arrest either one of you.
Right. You could just nod out there in Grand Park.
Coming up at 7:07, we'll talk to our friend Brett Baer, host of Fox News Special Report, get his reaction to the Biden-Xi call and the readout from it. Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning is columnist extraordinaire John Cass, johncassnews.com, where you find his columns and the Chicago Way podcast.
$50, 1 year, 2 months off.
Such a deal.
And you might someday get some
merch. Some swag.
Yeah.
Get the No Chumbalones hat.
If you're looking at it, yeah, you see it.
Yeah, very nice. Maybe some recipes, beer can chicken.
Maybe a shot glass.
KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, the quadruple threat, flacking for
what now?
President Biden yesterday, was asked a fairly straightforward question from by Phil Wegman from RealClearPolitics.com about the topics covered in the call, like the topic of the origins of COVID, and KJP was having none of it.
So that's not the answer to my question. And last August, the president said in a statement that the Chinese have not been cooperating. We're going on a year now.
And I just said that.
Yeah, you also said that, but you can't tell us whether or not the president pressed Xi to be more cooperative.
I am not going to go beyond the readout that I just gave you.
Still can't get an answer about from this administration about where things stand with trying to identify the origin of the virus, even as we're still in pandemic mode. The administration certainly is.
You might get an answer if the rest of the press corps stood up and supported Wegman, as we used to do in news conferences, when some flax was being vague like that, and, you know, obtuse, other reporters would get up and say, wait a minute, what did he say? He said this. Why don't you answer it? And people would pound on it.
Yeah, you would think that if you had some self-respect, you would be insulted when all she's allowed to say, all she's trotted out to say about the call is a recitation of what you heard from day one of this administration about what they inherited in terms of the COVID response and the wonderful job they've done since, based on what they inherited, which is what she offered. So there's nothing new to talk about with respect to the conversation between Biden and Xi. There's no flags for America being advanced there. Any update on Hunter's business dealings? No, that's not asked either.
How about a special counsel?
Yeah, for the Hunter Biden investigation, considering the FBI apparently some in the FBI apparently tried to spike the investigation into him in advance of the 20 election. Yeah, that's a topic too. Where's Merrick Garland when you need him? Maybe. I don't think KJP is allowed to speak to that either. For more on this, Brett Baer joins us, host of Special Report, of course, 5 p.m. Chicago time. Number one best-selling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union and the Crisis of 1876. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Do you know anything more about this call between Xi and Biden? Any topics that were discussed? Discussion, like have they seen Maverick? What did they talk about? What do we know?
No, it's incredibly vague. We know a couple of things. One, Peter Ducey followed up on that question and asked again, and got the similar cul-de-sac of rhetoric from the White House. But we also know that the statements, the readouts, and the announcements from both the White House and China were completely different, not shockingly,
right.
about Taiwan specifically. But we don't really have a lot of specifics, but we do know that at the same time all of this is happening, at the same time that we learn that there is an effort to infiltrate the Federal Reserve by China, at the same time we learn all of these things that China is doing to compete or somehow thwart the U.S. around the world, that this administration is considering at this time lifting the tariffs put under by the Trump administration. They haven't done it yet, which a lot of China experts are saying is a great thing, but they are considering it, and that's part of this talk.
Mm. And also, you would think part of the discussion would be particularly in weighing that decision. What are you doing or not doing to aid Putin's efforts in Ukraine? You know, we're spending a lot of money. We're paying a lot of attention. We want to stop, obviously, Putin's advance. We've got the Western world united on that front. And where exactly are you these days, President Xi?
Yeah, and there's a video this morning about Sergei Lavrov meeting his Chinese counterpart, and the Chinese foreign minister kind of walks into the room sheepishly, and Lavrov says, "Oh, don't worry, we're both friends here, we're on the same side." You know, obviously made for the cameras, but yeah, I think the extent of China's support of Russia, clearly they're buying a ton of Russian oil, as is India, and thereby the sanctions about Russian oil are really not having an effect.
Speaking of photo ops, curious choice by Ukrainian President Zelensky and his wife to take this time to do a photo spread for Vogue magazine with his wife as the cover girl. I don't know. That strikes me as, I understand the public relations piece of it and so forth. It just strikes me as a little tone deaf, the timing of such a spread, even as I know he's still being feted by the West. But I don't know. That's not a good look for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought it was a little strange, too, especially when they're still making, you know, the case for high Mars rocket launchers and support from Europe, and you know they're fighting these fights. It is a little strange about you know, the Vogue inside the relationship kind of thing, and the interview with Piers Morgan, which you can see on Fox Nation. But they punted that up. You know, they put it out there, and Piers flew in and did it. So I think it's a little weird timing too.
When do you think the press in Washington will begin to press President Biden on special counsel to investigate his son?
I think that, you know, there have been a lot of questions along the way. They just punt them to DOJ, and then Merrick Garland says that he's confident in the U.S. attorney in Delaware. And there just are increasing stories about how that person is inadequate for this job. Not only that, but then the stories about the effort to kind of end it, end the investigation, and what that means. I think that they're going to have to at some point deal with the political elephant in the room of these charges, and something's going to have to happen. And whether it is something that Hunter Biden gets a FARA charge about foreign registering, or, you know, in conjunction with this investigation of President Trump with January 6th, you know, somehow they tie the two together. I'm throwing things against the wall here, but they're going to have to deal with it.
Well,
in some way or another.
Yeah. And Christopher Wray obviously has some questions to answer. He should be answering them straight away when a report comes out that FBI agents were classifying evidence in the Hunter Biden investigation as disinformation so as to derail the investigation prior to the 2020 election.
Yeah. And not only that, but I think he should go after all 50 of those former intelligence officials who wrote that letter, who said it's clearly Russian disinformation, which then candidate, then Vice President Joe Biden holds up in the debate and says, look at this. This is Russian disinformation. And then fast forward, the New York Times and others do a mea culpa and say, you know what, this is real. And by that point, obviously, we're into the following year in the Biden administration. So of all the things that, you know, are charged about the 2020 election, I think that is the most glaring of the rigged charges, because the Hunter Biden, how it was handled in the weeks before the election, was heinous.
Do you get the sense that there will be no justice for Hunter Biden and no pressure applied until and unless the combination of the D.C. press corps, generally speaking, and these institutions that seem to be hyper politicized on behalf of the left decide that Joe Biden needs to exit stage left and he's unwilling to do so? Is that the only scenario in which we get some conclusion and explanation associated with these investigations, or am I being too conspiratorial?
No, I think there's definitely a hill to climb, but I think it possibly could be spurred by House control of the Republicans and the subpoena power of House committees that suddenly has a Hunter Biden hearing that this more stuff comes out publicly. But there is clearly no fear in the White House. I mean, Hunter Biden's daughter is getting married at the White House.
Yeah. So, this is, you know, just a weeks after the voicemail from, you know, the laptop that keeps on giving, with Joe Biden undermining his public position that he never talked to his son about his business dealings when
he met with 14 of his son's associates.
Yeah.
With him.
Yeah.
Not like, I mean, talk to him.
It's, you know, you can understand why people are scratching their head and losing confidence in law enforcement at the federal level, DOJ, FBI, and, well, media too, of course. Even Katie Turr is now questioning whether or not she's doing more harm than good. That's how that's how confused the D.C. press corps is, at least some. You mentioned, I'm sorry, go ahead, Brett.
Self-reflection, yeah.
Yeah, it's what a moment that was. January 6th, you mentioned it. So something else about the season finale last week and so taking that, all that's been presented. One, you have the Molly Hemingway reporting on Cassidy Hutchinson. Seems like she did an about face over her view with respect to her testimony as compared to what her views were for the 6 months subsequent to January 6th. Which is noteworthy in terms of her credibility as a witness. And then also this memo that was made public. I saw it, John Solomon's reporting at Just the News, that 3 days before January 6th, Trump had a meeting with Milley, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, and his acting Secretary of Defense said, we got a lot of protesters coming in January 6th, got to make sure it's safe. And the Secretary of Defense said in the room, we have a plan. We got it. We got this under control. So how? I mean, the credibility of their star witness is one piece of it. That memo to me is exculpatory at least with respect to any notion that this was some orchestrated coup d'etat attempt. It's just, but there's no, you know, outside of certain circles, there's no coverage of this.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered the Kash Patel and Chris Miller saying about that meeting. We have talked about, you know, the difference between saying, I want it to be safe and ordering, you know, and that the president doesn't technically order the National Guard, so that when Chris Miller testifies under oath that there was no order from the president, it doesn't discount that he was telling them that day that he wanted it to be safe. I agree with you. And that all factors in. I think that there are, you know, there's other testimony in that that hearing that is compelling, because they're for the most part Trump confidants or Trump associates who wanted Trump to be successful. So you have to take some of that. I understand the Cassidy Hutchinson questions. But the overall is that there is no cross-examination.
Yes.
There is no pushback. There is no Jim Jordan. There is no other side. So you have to look at it through skepticism. And that doesn't discount some of the bad things, that the president doesn't look great in 187 minutes. It doesn't discount that, but it also has to be factored in as you look at it.
Before we let you go, I just want to get your sense as you know, Kim Strassel, who I know is a regular on your panels, had what I described as a wonderfully vicious piece in The Wall Street Journal. I thought she's spot on about this mansion business and the $1 trillion that is going to be spent in this stagflationary environment while everybody's pretending that they're inflation fighters. Very strange. But the Republicans weren't duped. This, they just lack impulse control, was her point. McConnell and the 16 Republicans who voted on the quote unquote chip bill and ushered in another $750 billion to spend on top of it when Manchin finally got a deal with Schumer. Do McConnell and Senate Republicans, do you think they appreciate what they've done? Do you think that they think they got duped? Do you think that this was all just political theater and they knew how this was going to play out?
I don't know. That's a great question. I do know that they really wanted that chips bill and they were signed on to it for national security reasons. And they were convinced that the U.S. needed to bring semiconductors production to the U.S. and that the government had to get involved to compete with China and Taiwan and others. So that overrode the concerns about whatever was going to happen politically afterwards about the reconciliation. However, I think that, you know, it seemed like it came together late. I'm not sure that was a Machiavellian move to get the chips bill through and then suddenly have this deal. I do think that we're finding out that there's some doozy things in this $800 billion
bill. I bet. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll look forward to your reporting on that. Brett Baer, host of Fox News' Special Report, 5 p.m. Chicago time weekdays. Number one bestselling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and The Crisis of 1876. Brett, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
You too. You join us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
What do you think?
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is John Cass, johncassnews.com.
Hey, Dan.
And, John, we talked about this on the program yesterday, but didn't get your take. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about what Rashad Bailey had to say. Hopefully he'll be joining us shortly. Rashad Bailey was the owner of Dinner and a Movie, a restaurant in Lincoln Park. 14-month battle with the city that he conceded on Tuesday morning. They got a sticker on my door, they effing won, he said to CWB Chicago in an extended interview. He had some issues in and around his business. including a shooting that opened about a that happened about a month after he opened his restaurant last year. Shots were fired. Large fight erupted outside his doors. No one was struck by the gunfire, but police ordered the business to close immediately under the city's summary closure ordinance. And that sort of started this back and forth between him and the city that ended this past week. He said, among other things, "You got regular black people who come to dinner in a movie," his restaurant. "They're like normal people. Then you got those other MFers. They're savages. All it takes is one or two, and it's like, damn, stuff happened. I'm black, so I can say this. At this point, whatever." He goes on to say of the complaints that he was dealing with from the city. He said black-owned businesses are treated differently in Chicago in all the wrong ways. Quote, "If a black customer at a white store, if it's a black customer at a white store, it's a shooting. If it's a black customer at a black store, it's a problem. Shootings by those bars on Hubbard Street with white and Arab owners, that's not a problem." And he compared what happened. He's essentially comparing what happened outside of his business to the murder of that rapper FGB Duck in the Gold Coast a couple of years ago. He was in an effing store on Oak Street and they shot his ass up. Is that the store's problem? No.
Store still open?
I
think so.
Yeah. I think he's got a couple of points here, and he goes on to make a couple of more. He's got a lot to say. "I don't like those crazy MFers. It's like you have a good time, you go home." Them, talking about the savages versus the normal people, which is a thread that runs through his comments. Them, the savages, "the only thing they effing respect is being put in handcuffs. I'm 6'3", 200 pounds, and that stuff is crazy. As a city, we're effed. The music they're listening to, how'd we go from everybody loves bump and grind to effing killing each other? How'd that happen? We got problems in Chicago. This ain't no effing Mayberry. People getting shot and robbed all throughout the city. People getting their cars stolen. People losing their life. Whatever leaders are doing, it's not working." Then you got a person leading the police department who's not even from Chicago. He don't even speak the effing language. "Lock all their asses up. I don't know what's going on with our DA or our state's attorney. I don't know what the F they're called because I don't go to jail, but it's a problem." Uh-huh. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of truth in what he's saying and a lot of frustration. His problem politically is it's Lincoln Park where he's doing his business or had his business, right? Lincoln Park, dinner and movie. There was some, you know, wrestling and fighting in his place between groups that he called savages. His problem is he doesn't have the white chicks on his side, the ones who feel, the ones with the feelings that you read in the newspapers.
He needs the sentimental barbarians of Lincoln Park to rally to him.
Yeah, because, you know, they're the ones who protect teachers who don't educate black children, but...
Yeah.
They need to be protected. That's the only way to win. You have to have the feelings.
Well, on the matter of locating his business in Lincoln Park, he said, I put my restaurant in a good neighborhood to get away from the effing crazy.
Right.
But you can't get away from the effing crazy in Chicago. Not anymore. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You can't get away from the crazy.
You know what? And we saw this with the Joe Gentile thing with Lori Lightfoot too. How many of these? I don't want to say the word. How many of these
Joe Perillo?
These people in government or journalism ever made a payroll? Ever made a payroll where people are depending on you, Dan Proft, or John Kasich? Come up with the money and give me a check for what I did that week or the week before. How many? They have no bleeping clue about what it costs to run a business and what it takes. Nothing. And so we lose a business. Not that I like the business.
Why don't you like the business? Dinner and a movie?
Yeah.
Why?
I was a film student, and my first job was a movie screener at Columbia College. I could have gone commie, but I went conservative against the grain. And you talk in a movie, I want to kill you.
Well, I agree with
Shut
that.
The bleep up.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's why I go to the theater, it's like an off time, so that
off times very few and people a very in the theater. Very high priced ticket.
Well, but the dinner in a movie concept, you've got movie theaters that have food offerings, like full meal offerings. I mean, I don't know. And actually, this is sort of more like a traditional movie theaters movie experience, as I understand it. Because Bailey complained about the complaints,
right?
So they were looking for stuff. It was like, oh, you have finger food, because I don't cook steak and lasagna. It's not real food. Go F yourself. Okay. They said, oh, they don't have food. They have party wings. Hey, you effing
snobs,
penis head.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo Wild Wings is a $1 billion company. Go audit their stuff and see what comes up. I mean, I like
chicken wings.
I like the,
wait a second, you're opposed to chicken wings?
No, not me.
Not you, but city inspectors? Yeah.
Okay. He also makes the point, too. I mean, the context here is relevant. You got people dancing on their cars two blocks over. That's a dinner and a movie problem. Blocking driveways blocks over. He's talking about some of the complaints that he was getting to related to his business that are beyond any sort of reasonable expectation of his responsibility,
right?
Which is a fair discussion point. Phil on the Northwest Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Mr. Frank, Mr. Chris. You know, they got to end all welfare programs. People don't understand this, whether it's corporate or private. You know, the Democrats, we've been listening all our lives, blaming Republicans. Show me something the Republicans control. No, the Democrats destabilize everything. I mean, marriages, businesses, schools, whatever they can, neighborhoods, and you look at this poor business, and this is why he's going through shock, because I run my own trucking company, and anytime you just got to tell someone, if nothing about it, just tell them to run a business in Chicago. They'll have this massive shock and wake up in seconds, because if you're living a life as an employee or as a union member, you have no idea what's going on until 30 years go by, and right. and if these kids are off welfare, And these big corporations are too. Everybody's hiring. Okay, it's Sniff.
All right, we lost Phil. Thanks for the call, Phil. Appreciate it.
I used to say at the paper, when I was at the paper, people, they'd talk, I'd hear business talk. And I'd say, how many of you have ever run a business?
Business talk, that's hilarious. How many of you can...
How many of you have ever run one? How many of you have made a payroll? Raise your hands. Nobody raised their hands.
How many of you could do long division? I would like the hand raise on that, and then I put that to the test, frankly. Going back to Rashad Bailey, dinner and a movie proprietor, speaking of the experience being mugged by reality, as Phil was sort of suggesting, the idea that he might be running for office or starting another business in Chicago, his response, F Chicago, F this corruption. This is not like a city where if you're a good person with a good heart and good character and do the right thing, you'll do okay. I feel like we're in the old days. I'm over this stuff. They treat you better in red states anyway if you're a business owner.
They do.
Well, of course they do. The numbers bear that out, and the population movement bears that out. But I thought, number one, the fact he acknowledged that red states are more business friendly is nice. Number two, this other line, though, this is not like a city where if you're a good person with a good heart and good character and do the right thing, you'll do okay. That's a real statement to me. And I think it's true, largely. Don't you?
I just go back to what I learned and saw with my own eyes. Hey, Greek. These are really good-looking steaks. Hey, Greek, these steaks look good. And my dad told me to fill up the bag to give to the city inspectors, ribeye steaks.
Corey,
that's all I needed to know.
Corey in Woodlawn.
Hey, good morning, Dad. Good morning, sir.
Morning.
I work taps in Woodlawn with B313, and some of the problem is that these long-term residents on these blocks don't really want you to clean up the blocks from these savages. They let them have it when you call the cops and work with police officers to get the drug dealers and the gangbangers off the block. The long-term residents will know you're doing it, and then they'll tell the gangbangers that you're out there trying to work to clean up the block. So I agree with this guy. This is a savage behavior. It doesn't look like he's dissipating anytime soon. So I wouldn't blame him if he left us for greener pastures. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Corey.
What was with...
That's a problem. I mean, people want to, you know, you want your neighborhood not to be a shooting gallery, then you have to participate and not on the side of gangbangers. That's true. We have to have expectations for people. Everybody who's an adult should be treated like an adult. That's the adult expectations for adults. Absolutely. Matt, Southside.
Yes, Dan. My only problem was one of the things that this guy said was that, you know, he felt like he was being targeted because he was a black-owned business. My whole thing is, as far as our city leadership, whether it's Superintendent Brown, Lori Lightfoot, or Kim Fox, these people are all black as well, who are kind of letting the city, you know, they're losing control of the city. So that's my one issue with that. And the other thing is let's face it, this is Lincoln Park. Now, I'm not saying it's possible that a lot of the white neighbors are calling the cops. This is one of the most liberal neighborhoods in the city of Chicago.
Absolutely.
So,
but they didn't like the fact
absolutely.
That
thanks they, didn't for the
like
call,
black,
Matt.
They didn't like black people getting rowdy at the bar, at the dinner and the movie.
Oh, no.
That's what they got upset about. There weren't. I didn't see the Karens in response defending, you know, Karens United.
Right. Right.
I didn't see that.
Where are they?
Where are the Karens?
Providing the frontline defense of the black business owner. Well, we know. We know the hypocrisy. We know that most of them are closet racists. I mean, they are with their pro-abortion positions.
How can you not be if you're a Democrat, a liberal Democrat, and you're not a racist, say that, then I call you a liar. Because everything about you,
yeah.
about your politics and your,
yeah.
the way you form
so,
ideas and everything.
So, of course, right. Rashad Bailey went to a nice neighborhood so he didn't have to deal with the crazy, he thought. But it's a different kind of crazy. It's not the violence as much, although Lincoln Park is certainly not immune. It's the political ideology. That's the real crazy. And that infects every corner of the city. And I agree with what Matt said, too. I mean, when he says this is institutional racism, what happened to him? Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. So I don't agree with everything he said. But I think he's over the target on a lot of what he said about how the city operates. And he's not giving any quarter to Superintendent Brown or Lori Lightfoot or Kim Fox or anybody else either. Deborah, Arlington Heights.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I'm really so tired of all the gaslighting that's going on. And, you know, having to be a tax-paying citizen and then end up paying for all of this. I mean, then we're told that, you know, throwing money at things is going to solve problems, and it isn't. And, you know, they don't want to go to the root causes and call them out and start doing about something about that. And as a person who's older and still working and is going to have to work for a while yet and has a spouse that's working two jobs that's going to work for a while yet that's over 70 years old and continuing to pay for this nonsense, I'm sick and tired of it on a federal level, too.
Thanks for the call, Deborah.
Well, there's a red state right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard a prominent columnist move there. So here's the thing about Rashad Bailey. He mugged by reality, maybe a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what sort of views he came into doing business in Lincoln Park with. But but think about the impact that his experience is going to have with the patrons and him particularly being as outspoken as he's been. Maybe that starts to shake some cobwebs out of some more minds. Maybe. Maybe.
Or,
I don't know.
Or maybe not.
Maybe. Well, you're such a cynic.
I'm
trying to be hopeful.
I see these people.
How dare you?
You've destroyed my dreams.
Yeah.
You've taken my dreams.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but if nothing else, and I'm not talking about like, oh, vote Republican. I'm just saying those people who treat you like a mascot, those people who use you as a conversation piece at their club or cocktail party.
Or use you as a weapon.
Or
fashion you as a club.
Yeah. Do you start to have a better understanding of who they actually are and whether or not they're really fighting for your interests, whether they're really an ally, to use the word, or not? I think Rashard Bailey had a wake-up call on a couple of fronts, both about the city and about that neighborhood. Top of the morning, Dan and John Cass, johncassnews.com. He is in for Amy J this morning. I got a movie recommendation for you, John, for your dinner and a movie at home in the solitude of your domicile. Kevin Bacon movie. You ready?
Yeah.
It's called They Them.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm guessing that some of you, you're not happy. Maybe you don't fit in. People make fun of you. Well, I can't make you straight, but you give us this week, and we might be able to help. Boys cabin over there, girls cabin over there.
I use they, them pronouns, as in they can't believe they're at this camp.
I have zero interest in not being gay.
There's no judgments in this room.
Sometimes Aisha was invisible.
I would understand it a lot more if there was Bible thumping and queer bashing.
Do you even believe in any of this? Come in, please.
Do you think your parents are disappointed in you?
Sometimes.
So what do? You try to make yourself special. You become they. Today, we're going to be exploring traditional gender roles.
Look how long they've been doing this.
It's time to play.
This could get a lot worse.
Where's my killer?
We need to get out of here.
Taste?
Just enjoy the sunshine and work on your tan.
They/Them. Streaming only on Peacock, August 5th.
Oh, wow. I just can't wait not to see that.
Kevin Bacon, Bible-thumping, LGBT-hating conversion camp director where the LGBTQIA folk get hunted down and killed Friday the 13th style. That's the movie.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So goes Beverly Hills, so goes the nation, John. Beverly Hills city elders said if L.A. County passes a mask mandate, we're not enforcing it. And then L.A. County said we're not going to impose an indoor mask mandate, even though that's their inclination. And so we have this ongoing...
Not even at the cement pond?
We have this ongoing Groundhog Day situation with respect to COVID mitigations. San Diego School District... mask mandate. The largest school in Kentucky, school district Kentucky, mask mandate. Others are resisting, and we'll see what happens this fall in Chicagoland. For more on where we stand with COVID, pleased to be joined again by John Tierney, contributing editor of the City Journal, former reporter and columnist at the New York Times, and co-author of The Power of Bad, How the Negativity Effect Rules Us and How We Can Rule It. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan.
So it's award season, that means we need to talk about who's going to win the Nobel Award for pandemic leadership. And obviously that, you know, immediately the World Health Organization comes to mind, if not Tony Fauci and Deborah Birx.
Yes, they should all share it, really. No, the really disheartening thing is that in the betting markets, people actually do bet on who's going to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And the bookies in London have the WHO as the favorite for this year's Nobel Peace Prize for its horrible work in during the pandemic. And it's just, I mean, you know, it's frightening to think that they would be rewarded for that. And the people who really deserve it are the people who maintain sanity in this pandemic. But just crazy, as you said.
But you got to keep up appearances, right? We're in the phase now of justifying everything that was done. That's what the COVIDians must do. Justify the lockdowns, justify their mandates, justify...
Just like you have a letter from Cardinal Richelieu.
Yeah, justify the mitigations. And so part of that is honoring those who did what they were supposed to do from the perspective of, you know, the COVIDian overlord.
Right. No, that's the, you know, the Davos crowd and
right.
He's basically going to reward itself. You know, it was ridiculous. Tony Fauci just gave an interview in which he said their big mistake was we should have had much, much more stringent restrictions with N95 masks at the start. And it's just crazy that they can, you know, go on ignoring all the evidence that the mask did not work. You know, all the evidence that places like Sweden, you know, in Florida did better than average without masks. Without these things, and yet they just ignore it, and they hope that the big lie will continue. And I'm afraid as long as Joe Biden gets to a point, people and at the CDC it's going to continue.
Mr. Tierney, this is John Cass. When I first read
Call me John, nice to meet you.
Hey, when I first read the headline in the City Journal, "It's time to award the COVID Nobels," I thought it was going to be satire, and I was hoping for Governor Pritzker to win one, you know, and, shutting people down. No church for you, but get high and go have a drink, you know, buy a bottle. But you did celebrate Anders Tegnell. Am I pronouncing it right?
Swedish epidemiologist.
Yes, and that was, I just thought, excellent. So hats off to you. I tip my hat.
Well, thank you. I mean, he really does deserve the Nobel for maintaining his sanity. And really, if it hadn't been for him and a few other heretics, you know, we wouldn't really have the evidence to stand up to. I mean, the really clear evidence, you know, there have been hundreds of studies showing how bad the lockdowns were, that they didn't work, that the mask mandates didn't. But I think what you get from Sweden and you get from Florida, you have these real world examples. It was a natural experiment. I mean, the COVIDians, you know, trot out these very cherry picked data. Well, you know, they had a mask mandate for 4 weeks in one Kansas county and it did better than one other Kansas county, that kind of garbage stuff. But this is a real world experiment where you had a place that didn't wear masks. And in Sweden, nobody, you know, it was like 10% of the population wore a mask. You know, they said you might want to wear it if you're on a crowded commuter train at rush hour. But they didn't mandate it. Most people didn't bother with it. Students, you know, school children didn't wear it. They had no plastic partitions, no social distancing, no nothing in school. And they did better. They did much better than the rest of Europe in preventing excess deaths over the course of the pandemic. And, you know, the contrast with Germany was really striking because in Germany they had, you know, they mandated surgical masks across the whole country. And in some places in Berlin and Bavaria, they mandated N95 masks. And it just made no difference. You know, Sweden actually had fewer deaths than Germany, fewer excess deaths. And, you know, the places that had the N95 mask mandates didn't do any better than the places with the surgical mask mandates. And, you know, and if you look at the infection curves in Sweden and Germany, they were pretty much just the same, you know, minor variations in timing, but they just don't work. And we need this. So that's why I think, that Tegnell, there was another Swede who was Who was just wonderful. I thought it was Tegnell's mentor who previously been the state epidemiologist, and
Johann Gasecki.
Everyone else was,
yes,
and as everyone else across Europe was closing schools, and Tegnell was under all this pressure. We've got to do what everyone else is doing here. These people know it. Gasecki sent him this email with a famous line in Latin from a father's advice to his son back in the 17th century, who was worried about negotiating with foreign leaders. And the quote was, "Do you not know, my son, with how little wisdom the world is governed?"
Yeah.
He said, "Don't pay attention to the other idiots." And Tegnell himself during the pandemic wrote to his colleagues. He just said, "The world has gone mad." And that's what we still see. The world is still mad with Fauci, you know, and the WHO. Before the pandemic, everybody said all the plans said there's no point in doing masks. You know, it's not going to work. And suddenly now even, you know, that was in the WHO's plan, too. And now they're recommending mask mandates. It's just despite all the evidence, it really is just insanity.
Yeah, it would be interesting. So you've got to do the work here, so I'm giving you a homework assignment. But it would be great to, because I haven't seen a summary document that would have all of the studies on the relevant mitigations and impacts of the choices that were made, and as is just a resource. Number one, number two, though, the timeline. And the pronouncements from Fauci, Birx, the leading COVIDians, in the West, just a timeline from March of 2020 all the way to present day on the top line topics on COVID and what they said at each stage of the decision making over the last 3 years, wouldn't it?
No, it would, and also just contrast that with what's happened. You know, there's a book I wrote about in City Journal called Unmasked by Ian Miller. Mm-hmm. That he has wonderful graphs where he has here where they, these countries, states, over and over there'd be a state where then, the Washington Post or someone else would declare they beat COVID with masks, and then you've got that date, and then you see 2 weeks later a huge upsurge in cases. I mean, it just happened over and over around the world where the COVIDians would declare victory because we had masks, and then a month later it'd have the highest rate in the world.
So the mask is one thing, but also something in real time that we still don't have. I mean, and it'll be years before we get a handle on it, I suppose. But it's not talked about enough. Some of the questions that still surround the efficacy of the vaccines, now that we know they're not effective in preventing infection, which Deborah Birx pretends like she knew and said something about it.
Why didn't you know that?
Yeah, I mean, so that's obviously not how it was sold. But that's a good example of what I'm talking about in terms of the timeline of what was said when. But also still this issue. There's a story today. Three doctors from the same hospital die in the same week after the hospital mandates the fourth COVID shot or the second booster. And with young men and myocarditis and athletes that are inexplicably dropping dead.
Right.
I don't know, but we're not even asking the questions about, especially now, the risk reward as the virus attenuates in terms of its lethality.
No, it is obscene that we are pressuring parents to give this to healthy children. You know, it's just, I mean, Europe, you know, Sweden doesn't recommend it. You know, the experts at the FDA didn't want to do this, but basically the White House, forced this through. And the idea of giving vaccines to kids, and you're right, the whole question of vaccine efficacy, Martin Kulldorff, one of the world's experts on tracking adverse effects from vaccines, one of the great Barrington scientists.
Yeah.
He had an article recently reviewing and talking about studies showing there seemed to be a 1 in 800 chance of a serious adverse event after a vaccine. And so he said, if you're older and you have risk factors, maybe, the vaccine may be worth it. But for younger people, really have to think about this. And I mean, it is going to take some kind of, I did an earlier piece for City Journal saying, how are we going to reckon with this? How are we going to undo the fact that the public has been so scared and fooled into believing this stuff worked? And I mean, I think the best hope really is, you know, a Ron DeSantis presidency, you know, because he can run on that platform of saying, you know, I'd be, you know, we didn't do this craziness in Florida and we did fine. And I think that there needs to be some kind of big investigation of it. The problem right now is who would do it? You couldn't trust the WHO to do it. You couldn't trust, you know, the CDC, or the federal government, because, you know, obviously they're going to try and cover up their mistakes. But there does need to be some big investigation. And as you said, putting the timeline together, looking at all the studies, both about, you know, whether the lockdown measures worked and also what the vaccines really did. It's just, you know, they're so committed to this narrative of lockdown and get shot after shot. And there just simply isn't any skepticism in the media about it.
And it seems to me, too, that as long as we continue to prosecute this vaxxed and boosted and masks and stay safe and congregate settings and all of the cant of the COVIDian, then we direct people's attention away from making an assessment of the impacts, talking about how negatively children were affected in terms of their intellectual and social, emotional development in schools, talking about the economic devastation we inflicted upon ourselves, the deaths of despair. We don't, as long as I'm just focused on this positive, hey, go get your shot, go put your mask on, let's keep each other safe, let's be our brother's keeper, all of that can't, then we don't have to address the consequences of what we did.
Right. It's keeping fear alive. As long as we keep everyone scared, then they're not going to stop and think about, did this actually make any sense at all or not? And it's very tough. I mean, I still talk to friends of mine who are otherwise rational, and they're still terrified of this thing. And I keep saying that you don't have to worry anymore about this. It's basically, you know, after all the vaccinations, after all the natural immunity, this is like the flu. And yet, they're still fomenting. And of course, the media needs something to, you know, the media wants to cover up its mistakes, too. I mean, it's astonishing that Fauci could sit there with a straight face and say in this recent interview with Reason, we know that masks work. No, all the evidence is the opposite. But it's just, you know, as long as they keep people scared, that, you know, they'll keep lying.
Well, what about the next virus?
Monkeypox?
The next virus I don't know what it is. I'm not a fear porn merchant here, but there are viruses out there, and China's working on some, and there are dangerous viruses. It say another comes out, attacks us somehow. What after all this that we've seen, after all the politics, and the tap dancing on policy. What will be the effect of the world not believing or not thinking that public health professionals have their best interest at heart?
No, I mean, that's a real loss, as you say, that this total trust in public health professionals. And there's no reason to trust them. They have performed so badly that there needs to be just a thorough house cleaning at the CDC, you know, a thorough reevaluation of what happened so people can regain trust. But at this point, I don't believe anything the CDC says anymore. I mean, I might believe their data about some things, but the way they spin it, I don't take their recommendations seriously. This idea of vaccinating children now who are just at virtually no risk from COVID, babies. They virtually all had COVID, and the idea that you're going to give them a vaccine that there's not even any evidence that this vaccine for children does anything, you know, that it's effective at all for them, but based on the small trials with children. And we know that it has adverse effects. It's just crazy that this is allowed to continue. And I think unfortunately, a lot of people still want to believe them, but I think, you know, the trust has been going down and down, especially among Republicans. People have very little trust in the scientific establishment because it has become so corrupted. And I just, that's got to be changed or it's going to be bad the next time. And the other thing about the next pandemic is that, you know, the WHO is seeking these new powers so it can impose, these lockdowns and mask mandates, you know, around the world that they're, you know, they want to, you know, before this one, they said these were not the policies. Now they're suddenly flip-flop. and are trying to cover up their mistakes and trying to basically set this up as a default the next time around.
Solder us into our homes.
Trying to do.
Yeah.
John Tierney, contributing editor of the City Journal, former reporter and columnist at the New York Times, co-author of The Power of Bad, How the Negativity Effect Rules Us and How We Can Rule It. John Tierney, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
And you joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, coming up at 8:38, it's that time of the week with our special guest, John Cass, johncassnews.com. Open Mic Friday, taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. We'll take your comments.
That's why he's here.
Compliments, general crack pottery, dissertations on monkeypox from John Cass. We'll take it all at 8:38.
Northwest
now we check
Indiana
the headline.
What? Reviews, Northwest Indiana restaurant reviews.
Sure.
Right.
That's terrible.
We'll have the Northwest Indiana real estate market update from John Cass at 8:38.
Stay out.
Open mic. Open mic. Call it now. Open Mic Friday.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J this morning. JohnCassNews.com. You get his columns, you get his podcast. $50 a year. A bargain at twice the price.
$5 a month.
It is Open Mic Friday. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. Taking your calls with comments, compliments, criticisms, general crack pottery.
Bring it.
I want to remark upon something before we go to the lines, John. I'm surprised I missed this earlier. I've been a little off my game, I guess. But only in Washington, D.C. could spending another $750 billion in funny money be labeled the Inflation Reduction Act. But again, this is from the big guy who brought you back in the 2008-2009 recession, the famous statement, "We have to keep spending to prevent from going bankrupt."
If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Dog-faced pony soldier.
Well, among other things. But, I mean, just the paradoxes of it all. Anything you'd like to address monkeypox before we go to the call lines?
I will keep monkeypox at a distance.
6 feet.
At least 10.
6 feet if you're pleasuring yourself with your partner. That's according
like that.
To the CDC. Medical guidelines. Also, this from the World Health Organization, potential Nobel laureate, World Health Organization. For men who have sex with men, reducing your number of sexual partners, reconsidering sex with new partners, and exchanging contact details with any new partners to enable follow-up if needed is wise, according to, you know, Dr. Tedros, Director General of WHO. So you have heard from Dr. Tedros, you heard from Dr. Walensky at CDC about the community of men who have sex with men. That's their focus on monkeypox. Also, the name monkeypox is now coming under scrutiny, the term monkeypox. Again, apparently Tucker Carlson had a little naming contest on his program the other night, and the winner was Schlong COVID.
Ouch.
You seem uncomfortable talking about monkeypox.
I don't like to talk about bodily functions.
Well, it's not not a bodily function. We're talking about viruses.
Oh, okay.
We're trying to save lives.
You're a man of science.
and data.
6 feet away. Okay, gotcha.
I mentioned this earlier. The New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene Commissioner Ashwin Vasan also raising the issue of the term monkeypox, as he believes that it could be painful, pun intended, to vulnerable populations. So I don't know. Maybe then we need like pride pox. Is that a if you have any suggestions on a more sensitive name for this virus called monkeypox than monkeypox, please do give us a call. John told a story earlier in the program about his life as a career criminal before he cleaned himself up and started to fly right. Tom in Blue Island, John Chicago's Morning Answer.
Are you there?
Yes, Tom, I'm here.
Yeah, Tom.
Sorry, guys. Hey, John, I just wanted to comment that growing up in Mount Greenwood, we used to have problems with the Oak Lawn police as well, but it wasn't for, like, bags of pot and bottles of whiskey. They would tell us to get back on our side of Pulaski and stay away from the girls at the St. Catherine's Fest. I never thought that we'd see the day where Oak Lawn would become the flashpoint of a Palestinian crisis in the United States, sir.
The St. Catherine's was right down the street from where we grew up. We played ball in the parking lot, and St. Catherine's Fest, nothing like it.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Rose Morrison was there, I remember.
Yep. That was before you disgraced your family, though.
Before I disgraced my family, getting busted for ditch weed, and my dad didn't talk to me for 6 months. And I said, Dad, you got to talk to me. Please talk to me. And he said, he was drinking ice water. He said, take this glass, smash it on the patio, a million pieces, then put it back together like it never was broken, and then come talk to me. So that hurt.
Papa Cass was rough.
But it was
good.
Straight up.
Yeah.
I deserved it.
And, of course, we were talking about Oak Lawn because of this police stop that's the subject of protests, the arrest of this 17-year-old who fled police. Here we go again. Do not flee police. Comply.
He had a gun.
And had a gun. And the body cam and dash cam video was released, and we went through it. So if anybody wants to talk about that further, we can. But again, but the Oakland police chief narrating the video that was made available to the public press conference, and saying that they followed procedure. You had a young man who was non-complying with police orders, who was protecting a pouch in which there was a gun and wouldn't put his hands behind his back. And so they took the necessary action to get him subdued and to extract the gun from his possession. Ron in Sycamore, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan. Hi, John.
Hey, Ron.
I'm honored to have two of the finest film connoisseurs in Chicago.
Yes.
And I've been waiting for this moment to speak to both of you. I have a movie for each of you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Good.
For Dan, I have the great French film Children of Paradise from 1945. Ooh, it's a three-hour film, and it's cut in two parts. The story behind the film is amazing because it was shot during the Nazi occupation, so they had to shoot around them. It's fascinating, and you're going to love it.
Okay. And I have not seen that. All right, I'm going to check that out.
The Duelists?
No, John, for what I have for you is
My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Close. The Greek film by Theo Angelopoulos called Eternity and a Day. It was made in 1989, I believe. It's a beautiful Greek film, and it's about a writer who's dying, and he's trying to find meaning in his life. So he meets this young boy, and they establish a relationship, you know, very pure and simple.
Uh-huh.
But the film is just beautiful. You must see this film. And lastly, for each...
Wait, hold on. That's what's the name of that film? I want to see that, too. What is it, Eternity for a Day?
Yeah.
Eternity and a Day.
And a Day.
Eternity
okay.
and a Day.
Okay. Okay.
And the line is spoken in the movie. Finally, a book for each of you. And Dan, you may have seen this book, or you may have read this book. I don't know for sure. The book is called Left to Tell. Left to Tell. And it's by a woman from Africa. Her name is Immaculée Elabogiza. She's Rwandan, and she survived the Rwandan genocide.
Mm.
I don't even want to tell you. You have to find this book. You have to read this. It's life-changing. It affirms God in the world. How she survived a million of her countrymen being killed. It's just, you have to read it. It's just phenomenal.
Thank
All right,
you,
I have
Ron.
Not read that book, Ron. You're a man of letters. We appreciate the call.
Thank
Very
you,
good. And a fellow cinephile. I love it. Thanks for the call, Ron.
I would say Forbidden Games.
I saw that.
About the children during World War II?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Left to Tell was the book, if you want to read and watch along with John and I. Left to Tell is a book. That's Rwanda. Eternity in a Day is the Greek film. Children of Paradise, 1945. All right.
Okay.
That's good. I got my weekend plans now. Eduardo, Midway.
Yeah, Dan, John, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's an interesting thing I think they should do, because instead of trading that arms dealer, Mayor Lightfoot's security team is not paying those speeding tickets. So I think we should swap them instead of the arms dealer.
Swap Lightfoot's security detail?
Right, right. Instead of that arms dealer.
All right. Thanks for the call, Edward. I suggested Baryshnikov yesterday. Send him back. I mean, he's had a great life here.
Yeah.
He
was in a movie with Gregory Hines.
Yeah, White Knights. Yeah. And I think the Russians are still smarting about that movie. So, I don't know. Yeah, if you've got any ideas for the hostage exchange too with Brittany Griner and the guy accused of spying, Whalen,
and the actress who played Russian assassin spy. Even if they're American, just send them over there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I think there'd be a lot of people in this country interested in trading a lot of people in this country for, you know, Russian femme fatales. You know,
a woman
I mean?
Without a country. That would be the new movie. Mm. Corey Franklin wrote about that recently, about Griner, in your favorite website, johncasnews.com.
Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Another thing I was thinking about when you guys were talking about new names, call it rooster pox.
Why rooster pox?
Which is, what's a rooster? Is it a hen?
Oh, I see.
Jeez. Can't believe I walked right into that
you
one.
Walked right into it.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I told you I'm a little slow on my game today. All right. All right. Go ahead, Kevin.
So, speaking slow in the game, are the Republican establishment, is there any evidence showing that people are getting involved or supporting Bailey? Because this is the most opportune time to change the Republican Party, as you all know. As one of the famous stands is, it is ridiculous in Illinois.
Yes.
Is there any evidence of that? And if not, what can people do who listen to your show, who rightly get completely upset, and what can they do to get involved and help Bailey run?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things. By the way, there is some good news. Thanks for the call, Kevin. Mark Shaw, serpentine bottom feeder that he is, terrible human being, even a worse county chairman up in Lake County. He has resigned. He's been replaced by Keith Brin and a bunch of conservatives that I know that are activists, that are good and committed folk. And so Lake County, that's one of those collar counties. Republicans have been losing in statewide elections a lot, and it's a real problem. And now I'm pretty encouraged by the new leadership there that perhaps you could get Lake County back in the GOP column for statewide as well as locals this cycle. So there is evidence. He got the John Canzara, the FOP president in Chicago, FOP president, endorsed Bailey this week. There was an event that was held last week, we mentioned, with the Republican Party regulars and Bailey. As I said last week, and I'll say again this week, Bailey has to become a better candidate. He has to put together a better campaign if he's going to be successful. The PAC that I operate is going to make sure that people know the real Pritzker record, and we'll do what we can. But
he's got to give people a reason to vote for him.
The candidate has to be a material participant in his election. And I would say this, what he really needs to do, he needs to make the election about J.B. Pritzker, because elections are referenda on incumbents. But to your point, John, he also needs to introduce himself to the public so that they're comfortable that he is a okay place to land, particularly for people who are contemplating, and there are many of them, doing something they haven't done in a while, if ever, and that's vote for a Republican for governor.
And Pritzker's job is to make him scary.
Pritzker's job is to make him scary.
And so his job is to make himself not scary.
Yeah.
To offer some alternative.
Yeah, I mean, that's, scary. I mean, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. The ridiculous abortion commercials and stuff, you know, you just got to be able to make arguments. Pritzker is in the character assassination game, and I'm in, and Bailey should be in the arguments game. We made arguments against Richard Irvin in the primary. That's what we did. We made arguments. Here's what he said. Here's who. Here's what he's done. And this is inconsistent with what he's saying now. And, you know, this is what kind of party we need. This is kind of what kind of nominee we need in order to be successful, and also to be successful electorally as the means to being successful when it comes to policymaking. So that's the sort of disparity I think should be presented so that people understand the substance of their choice. We'll see. Brooke in Lakeview, yeah. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I'm just calling in to give you some names for the
monkey pox. Oh, please. Yeah, go ahead.
Cockpox, possibly. Donkey dot.
Donkey pox.
Yeah. And probably COVID number two.
COVID number two. Okay.
Zing.
Because we know what number two is.
Thanks.
Got it.
Thanks for the call, Brooke. Yeah.
Brooke, he doesn't have to be hit in the face twice in one day with the 2x4. He got it.
I think Brooke may be a little too on the nose with the suggested renames, the new names for monkeypox, but okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Mo and Lyons.
Hi, Dan. Hi, John. I wonder if we can get any updates on the tax cheat, Ben Bradley, on that girl from LT that beat up the other girl, and I think monkeypox should be called P-butt pox.
P-butt. Name it after Buttigieg, yeah. All right, P-butt pox. Put that down on the list there. Maybe we'll do a survey on AM560 website.
What happened to that girl that got in the fight in Western Springs? At a great high school. Lyons Township, that I used to know, that I paid for, that helped pay for.
It's a good question. We've been remiss in not following up on that. Western Springs Police went into their four-corner stall, and the school, of course, you know, can't comment, student record, and blah, blah, blah. So we'll follow. I'm glad Mo brought that up. We'll follow up on that. Also, Ben Bradley.
Oh, come on. Poor Ben.
Yeah, $5,000 tax bill on a $2 million house in Hinsdale. Hey, but wait a second. This is this is my favorite ever. Hey, we never appealed our taxes. Oh, really? Yeah. You never appealed a $5,000 property tax bill on a $2 million joint in Hinsdale? Wow. Could it have been maybe you didn't want any scrutiny that you were paying $5,000? Much less worth.
There is no evidence that, you know.
I'm not saying there's evidence. I'm just saying you know that $5,000 on a $2 million property in Illinois, period, much less Hinsdale, that's not the property tax bill. You can look around and see your neighbors paying 7 and 8 times that and no better. But hey, he's a newsman. I get it.
All I know is I called Mr. Liston and appealed my taxes there. He's a lawyer. That's where I go.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't get the Ben Bradley, Louis Gutierrez treatment, where you're basically off the rolls formally like Gutierrez or essentially de facto off the rolls at $5,000 for Bradley.
Every time Louis pipes up and talks about, you know, something in his future, I just think about that.
Oh, it's the best. It's one of the great stories, one of the great series of cast columns, the Louis Gutierrez property that's not on the property tax roll.
Living in the box in the basement.
Well, also, but I just can't wait till Ben sells his house. And the tax bill is adjusted. Capital event.
Come on, Ben. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Leave him alone.
Oh, poor guy. Such a good guy. Yeah, yeah.
I like him.
I got along with him okay until he behaved like a complete D-bag during COVID and on other matters. So you want to take some shots at people who know exponentially more than you do, Ben, about just about everything, whether it's our friend Emma Woodhouse or me, then let's do it, buddy. Right. Let's do it, pal.
Lots to unpack here.
You shouldn't be living in a glass house with a $5,000 property tax bill,
it's
pal.
It's Friday, man.
Hey. Mo from Lyons got me going. Jeff in Cedar Lake, Indiana.
Hey, I heard you talk about folk music a few weeks ago. Are you into folk music?
No.
No? Okay.
I was being unserious, but convince me.
Dan and I want to do a folk music, like, Christmas special where we sing I play the 12-string guitar, and Dan plays the whatever the zither, and we sing so-called Christmas songs and never mention Jesus Christ.
So Amy it'll be me, John, and Amy. It'll be like a
Peter, Amy with the tambourine,
Peter, Paul, and Mary tribute band.
Yeah. Thanks for nothing.
I want to turn you on to Pierce Pettis.
Heard of him? All right.
Pierce Pettis, St. Paul's song, Kingdom Come, instrument, great songs. He's put out a lot of albums. You'll find them on iTunes, of course.
All right. Pierce Pettis.
Hey, I'll see you with Jimmy Driftwood.
George, fire up some Pierce Pettis, George. Let's take a listen. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it. And I was talking about yodeling. Oh, but that was
Joel Dale.
Joel Dale and his yodeling. Yeah, I do like that. It's a real skill. Chuck and Delavan.
I see John doesn't like to talk about bodily functions. Just got done taking a Durbin. Hey, and speaking of Durbin, if you get 3 shots for the COVID and say, you know, he still gets it, if I was to give 3 rabies shots to my dog and my dog still gets rabies, I'd question my veterinarian. I got a great movie for you guys. The child molester, Roman Polanski, Quest for Fire. It had Ron Perlman in it. And it grunted through the whole movie. Came out, I think, in the 70s. But it was a really good movie, so if you get a chance to watch
I don't think he directed that one. Quest for Fire?
I don't think so either.
About the Neanderthals and the invention of fire and the missionary position? My wife refuses to let me watch that in the house.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. He was involved with that movie. Roman Polanski was.
Who's the director, Dan?
Jean-Jacques Anou.
I'll bet you a dinner down in Greektown. I'll drive down.
Well, you lost. Because
the director is Jean-Jacques Anou.
And they created
several. What did Roman Polanski do?
He did a lot of things, but he didn't do
He was
Quest
busy
for,
with
Quest
a 13-year-old girl and getting...
No. He had something to do with that film.
Okay, Chuck. I mean, I'm just telling you. I had to look it up because I remember the movie, but I didn't remember the
great
director.
Movie.
But I'm telling you who the director was. So
great movies. All right, hon. I'll be home in an hour.
All right, okay, Chuck. Thanks for the call. Go brush up on your Roman Polanski this weekend.
Dan, I regret to inform you, no Pierce Pettis in the system currently.
JohnCastNews.com. Subscribe, John Cass. Thanks for sitting in.
Thanks for having me.
9 o'clock, AM 560 WIND. Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.